Okay, hi everybody, and I do believe that we are ready to go on to program number 60. I seem to have a little bit more time today. I oftentimes steal the time to do these, and I would like to just keep going if I possibly could. Anyway, DK is telling us about the externalization of the hierarchy and its ashrams, and how this can be divided for the sake of clarity into the following points. So it looks like there are three major points: hierarchical adjustment and alignment, adjustment below mostly, alignment above. And then the next one is the mode of approach, the steps in the externalization process. And finally, the externalization itself. And and then maybe another one, the work of the externalized ashrams. I'm not sure I have the number of these points correct, but there seem to be heading points and then there seem to be subpoints. So we'll do what we can to make this as clear as possible. And today, the date here is May the 25th. Okay. So we can, he says, we can begin on our first point. And here maybe they'll be articulated, you know, so that one knows how many major points there really are and how many sub-points there are. We can begin on our first point, but only those students who are an integral part of hierarchy and in active communication with some ashram can profit in any measure by information on this subject. Well, you know, where do we stand? Only those students who are an integral part of the hierarchy. Integral, what does that mean? DK had students in his ashram basically standing on the periphery of the hierarchy, and they were accepted disciples. Does that make them integral? And in active communication with some ashram can profit in any measure by information on this subject. For example, those of you who are affiliated with my ashram or that of another of the masters are going through your preliminary training and functioning on the periphery of the hierarchical center and going through your preliminary training and functioning on the periphery of the hierarchical center can get a general idea and can develop, if you attempt to do so, an intuitive perception of the proposed hierarchical integrity and future functioning. So we have the word integral and we have the word integrity. Now, you know, once we were dealing with the reorganized seed group, which by this time should have occurred, the people knew whether they were accepted disciples or not. And they were all accepted disciples, really, even if one of them had not taken the first initiation. Resent not my words, quote, functioning on the periphery, for they indicate great opportunity for service. The masters need many such as you on the outskirts of their ashram to aid in hierarchical endeavor because you can reach the general public more easily than they can do, and you can step down the teaching far more adequately than could more advanced disciples. You and Disciples like you are a definite part of the hierarchy. As you function in an ashram, you have a most useful place, and I would beg you to have this ever in mind. I will, therefore, give you whatever information I can, and which is permissible, but shall necessarily have to leave much unsaid. So don't, you know, this is an appeal to the altruism of the members of the group, and some who want to be a bit more important than they are may resent the words that they are upon the periphery of the ashram, the outskirts, so to speak. Okay, now let's see. What are the main points? Hierarchical adjustment and alignment. As I said, you know, principally, it seems that adjustment is made to those areas that lie below the disciple, such as the run-of-the-mill humanity, which is non-aspiring, or maybe aspiring a little, or perhaps aspiring and not knowing they are aspiring, and alignment with the higher spiritual sources. Now, what do I mean by the word adjustment in connection with the hierarchy? Adjustment, you know, these are adaptations, I guess. Adjustment to karma, to the personality, to the soul, well, that would be above, to circumstances in the three worlds, we're always faced with that, to the impact of astral forces, powerful at the present time, or to the thought currents of those not oriented to the kingdom of God, does not constitute part of the training of those who are beyond the third degree of initiation. So, you know, initiates of the threshold, as it were, have to deal with these things, but not those who are beyond the third degree. Well, there still is karma, I suppose, but it's more of a world nature. One is already a soul and can function within the causal body, as he enjoined us to do in Letters on Occult Meditation, and said that so many of our failures in meditation were the result of not being able to do that. And the circumstances in the three worlds, well, a third degree initiate under Leo Uranus is positive to those circumstances, and they do not sweep him off his feet. And the astral forces are pretty much overcome at the second degree. And thought currents, which are illusory, are pretty much overcome. Those ordinary streams of thought, which are not oriented to the kingdom of God. It's not the training of those who are beyond the third degree. Initiates on and beyond that level have transcended reaction along these lines, whilst those below the third initiation are in process of rapid adjustment. I use the word adjustment here definitely in the sense of reorientation, and in this sense, much can be noted. Okay. So, you know, what we're dealing with can pretty well help us locate our position, as long as we don't, you know, become fixated with that position. On or beyond, at the third degree or beyond that level, have transcended reaction along these lines: astral, illusory, mental, many karmic adjustments, circumstance, which oftentimes stops people from doing what they know they should do. These are the kind of things that probationary initiates may have to deal with, but not initiates of the third degree. For eons and for countless cycles, the hierarchy has functioned withdrawn into a silence on the higher levels of the mental plane and on the Buddhic levels where contact has had to be made with them by those disciples who have, by discipline, development, and service, fitted themselves to establish such a relationship. This reorientation and emergence into physical plane, publicity, is going to demand much from the members of the hierarchy, just as it has not been easy for me to establish and retain contact with you, even when you have established the right to such contact. So for them, the hierarchy, it is going to be still more difficult to be in touch with those who are not even disciples. Well, that's understandable. Okay. Let's see what we have here. One, two, three. So for millions of years, and many, many cycles have elapsed, equinoctial and platonic years, and even the orbit of our seven solar systems around the central point around the Pleiades. You know, in 4 million years, you can cover a lot of cycles. Okay. For eons and for cycles, the members of the hierarchy have been submitting themselves to the needed training in order to react correctly when fuller contact has been established by Shambhala with the hierarchy. Well, a hierarchy may aspire towards Shambhala, but Shambhala certainly has to want that contact or find that the time is right for that contact, because he asks us here to note the phrasing here, note that. Well, and how long is a member of the hierarchy a member of the hierarchy, you know, from the time they are even initiates of the first degree, they are brought into the hierarchical circle, and they are true members of the hierarchy at the third degree, but then how long does that last? The second, third, and fourth degree can be taken in the same life, you know, initiation, human and solar, page 84 and 85. And then we have a greater expanse between the fifth and sixth and between the sixth and seventh, but already the possibility of entry into Shambhala exists at the sixth. So the question is, which members are we talking about? Because maybe they don't last in hierarchy that long before they choose a path on the way of higher evolution. Even if they are asked to make their choice, retain their choice, and help Sanat Kumara temporarily, as they are doing now. So anyway, Shambhala establishes the contact. And that's interesting. Hierarchy may aspire, but they do both, really, but towards Shambhala, it has to be aspiration, but it is Shambhala that decides when hierarchy shall be evoked. I would have you note the phrasing here. The contact has now been established by an act of determined direction emanating from the council chamber of the Lord of the World. That contact has been established. Now, you know, its hierarchy itself needs its full membership in order to contact Shambhala at certain times of the year, such as the Waisak. It's still dangerous for them, which is remarkable, as so many misunderstanding young disciples think the door of Shambhala is wide open to them, and all they have to do is will to walk in. Walk, you know, not really walk, but attune. Misunderstand me not. The hierarchy has always been in touch with the place of purpose, as it has been called. This is, you know, Shambhala. The place of purpose. Through the medium of its shohans and its senior directors, such as the Christ, the Manu, and the Lord of Civilization, two of them being initiates of the sixth degree and the Christ taking the seventh degree. These great beings have steadily revealed this purpose to the members of the hierarchy so that they have been able to grasp the work and work out the emerging plan. You know, the three great lords and the custodians of the plan, and higher than the custodians of the plan are the registrants of the will. I guess the three great lords are registrants of the will. But even to the masters, the Shambhala force had to be stepped down. Isn't that interesting? Just as the force of the hierarchy requires modifying for the average disciple and aspirant if they are to respond constructively to it. Okay, so let's see what we have here. The hierarchy has always been in touch, but there is a transformational stepping down process, which is at work. Otherwise, we blow the fuses, you know, and every center of energy is like a fuse, which can become overloaded, and then the contact breaks. You've seen what it's like when a fuse burns, or when a light bulb blows, you know, the connection is severed. And if there is too much force coming through, then the result is the very opposite of what would be hoped for. All right, now today, 1946, however, things are somewhat changed. New inflowing energies and the partial, only partial, sealing of evil in its own place, a sealing which will be progressively effective, have made a closer relationship possible. So really, hierarchy's relationship with Shambhala is certainly not complete. And as things stand now in the world, it is demonstrated that as the three periods, past, present, and future, are recorded and shown, the past, present, and future of the relationship between these three, Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, we notice that presently the connection with hierarchy is not complete. The masters are somewhat freer from certain of the arduous labors of the past cycles. Some of the available inflowing Shambhala forces, plural, are being absorbed directly by humanity, you know, in Shambhala impacts, and by certain of the subhuman kingdoms, particularly the mineral kingdom. Well, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, in this year, with the dropping of the atomic bomb, August 6th and 9th, the Shambhala mineral connection was really in evidence the release of that tremendous power contained in the mineral kingdom, the power of potentially vast destruction, and later to be understood in a more constructive manner. So we've had the Shambhala impacts of 1825, of 1975, of the year 2000, and other impacts which seem to come from Shambhala with great decisions of 1903, 1952, 2001, and one coming up in 2050. These are Shambhalic in nature. And the 6-degree initiates have submitted their decision for their path, but they've been retained in the service of Sanat Kumara. These are things, you know, way beyond our comprehension, but we can understand maybe a little. So there were arduous initial labors in the past, just getting humanity to begin thinking in this more inclusive manner. And maybe they can be more open to Shambhala. Just suppose that we human beings had a greater freedom due to the contributions of the fifth ray and all of its labor-saving devices. We could turn our attention towards hierarchy. And hierarchy for... because of whatever elements or have freed them can turn their attention more toward Shambhala, the mineral kingdom. Okay. The first ray and the seventh ray, you know, very powerfully connected. This latter will lead eventually, when complete, to those volcanic episodes and those basic earthquakes, which will change the face of the earth by the time the sixth root race comes into manifestation. Well, it's not far away. We may be passing through 5-6, but the 10 million year sixth root race will have its beginnings in another 2,000 or so years. So the face of the earth will change. And this is, you know, this is a prophecy, and we can only imagine how humanity might react. It is this direct inflow to the kingdoms functioning exoterically in the three worlds, which have relieved and will to some extent relieve the otherwise overpowering pressure upon the hierarchy. Well, this is Shambhala force relieving hierarchy. Shambhala force relieving hierarchy. So, you know, when a new energy comes in and supplements what you had to provide, it's quite a lift, and hierarchy is experiencing this kind of freeing up for higher things. You can't help but think that the Syrian law of freedom, a Uranian law, is coming in at this time. And certainly with the seventh ray cycle accompanying the Aquarian equinoctial age, and with Uranus being so important in Aquarius as the initial ruler and also the major ruler hierarchically, though veiled by the moon, we're going to have a lot of seventh ray and Uranian activity. Uranus is also involved in the very kinds of earthquakes which the Tibetan is talking about. I remember reading a book, maybe, I don't know, by Jeff Mayo, or maybe, where he was showing how when Uranus was at the bottom of certain charts, you know, along the IC, the earthquakes did occur. And one day that will be worked out, and the geophysicist will use astrology of that kind to predict a certain kind of necessary watchfulness, or to call for a certain kind of necessary watchfulness. So it's this direct inflow into the kingdoms which take off the pressure off of hierarchy. When pressure is taken off, new possibilities arise. Even though, as it is said in the book Heart, that pressure is the law of existence. And this will also act as a great aligning antikorana between the three planetary centers, which in the future will be totally aligned with the arrows going back and forth from hierarchy, well, from Shambhala to hierarchy, hierarchy to Shambhala, hierarchy to humanity, humanity to hierarchy, Shambhala to humanity, and humanity to Shambhala. That will be the completing of the interplay, which is not yet the case. Okay, a great aligning antikorana between the three planetary centers. That's in process, but it's going to still take a long time. It is to this alignment I refer in this instruction, the alignment of the three centers upon this planet and the adjustments that this necessitates and inevitably enforces. So I'll change this. Not only adjusting below, but the adjustment of that which is above to that which is below. Adjusting in alignment, you can pretty well consider them together, because, you know, in new alignments, many adjustments are required, and not only of the source above. Adjustments are required when facing a higher source by that which lies below. For the sake of humanity in the first place, and secondarily for the development of the subhuman kingdoms, the hierarchy has made certain difficult adjustments and alignments between the planetary centers, and these have been compulsory in their effects. Always this factor of sacrifice is involved, and if you're going to serve, really serve, you have to know the meaning of sacrifice. I mean, it's to make sacred, but there is a cost. And DK tells us constantly that the cost must be counted. Therefore, bear in mind that the adjustments which the hierarchy may impose upon itself bear small resemblance to the adjustments which you have to make in relation to your personality life. They are all hallmarked by the idea of service to the whole. The hierarchy is, in its true sense, or in its true sense, has no personality through which to express itself. They do have the Maya Varupa instrument. And this greatly complicates the problems which have to be faced as it contemplates exoteric manifestation and work. So I guess the first thing we looked at here was called hierarchical adjustment and alignment. It is the middle center, and it aligns pretty much with that which is above, but not exclusively, and adjusts pretty much to that which is below, but not exclusively. And the two types of action, adjustment, you know, kind of a fine tuning and a tweaking, and a repositioning occurs when new alignments, whether below or above, are experienced by the hierarchy. All right, the next one is adjustments and alignments within hierarchy. Whoop. That wasn't so good. All right. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And there we are. Okay. All right. What in the last analysis is the hierarchy? What a question. It is a great salvaging core of dedicated, liberated units of life working in group formation with all forms and lives and all kingdoms and with all souls, particularly. What a great definition. What a great definition. Worth repeating, don't you think? Worth considering. What is, in the last analysis, the hierarchy? It is a great salvaging core of dedicated, they can still be dedicated at that high stage, liberated from the causal body, liberated units of life working in group formation under the sign Aquarius, pretty much, and in relation to the 11th house, which deals with groups. In group formation, working in group formation with all forms and lives in all kingdoms and with all souls in particular. DK says, well, you know, he never really stuck to it, but he said, I'm going to work with your souls, and your personality states do not matter to me. But, you know, such was his compassion and his sensing of the real need that he did work with the personalities too, telling people about their rest, their habits, their diet, so forth. He came into that because he saw, you know, increasingly that it was necessary. You know, just imagine a quite high disciple suffering from bulimia, you know, binge and purge in terms of the diet. Well, he would have to deal with that. He said, sometimes you treat the physical body too drastically, and sometimes you treat it too well. And that was his way of describing this bulimic condition and maybe how to deal with it. As the hierarchy so works, its emphasis is solely upon the consciousness aspect of the form, you know, of all forms. It's not about forms per se. It's not, the astrology of the hierarchy is not personality oriented or form oriented. It's about raising consciousness no matter what the form has to go through. Its present agency of salvage and of service is the mind. So the necessity of mental focus is required of those who would enter hierarchy, regardless of what their ray may be. The mind, as it expresses itself through the mind of all humanitarians, a little lower than aspirants perhaps, but sometimes higher in a way, all aspirants, all disciples of all rays and degrees, and of all initiates, the mind is required. The hierarchy works through the mind, which does not mean that it does not bring love into the astral body and vitality into the etheric physical. The hierarchy can also can express itself through the medium of thought currents and ideas, and through them impose upon its hierarchical concepts upon the embryonic mind of the general and average public. So they can reach even quite low, relatively, as the Christ could. You know, he talked to a lot of people who were nowhere near being disciples or even spiritually inclined, but when he spoke to them, they shifted rapidly. And it also directs the educational work of all nations, the great second ray and its connection with education, so that the undeveloped masses can become, in due turn, the intelligent general public because of hierarchy, you know, because of the instrumentation of hierarchy. So its emphasis is upon the consciousness aspect, and that we, when doing rheology and astrology, we really have to remember that it's consciousness that has to be developed. And it's a whole lot better to suffer in the form with the result of a developing consciousness than it is to remain untouched in one's form and fail to develop the consciousness aspect. And its present agency of salvage is the mind, such as it appears in, you know, the more spiritually oriented types. And he begins with humanitarians, who are not necessarily disciples. They may be, or may not, or, well, certainly they don't necessarily know much about occultism. No, so many do not, but they oftentimes, and there's the irony, do even better work than the disciples who know a lot about occultism, but in a self-conscious and somewhat selfish manner. There's the irony. With all that we know, we may turn it into spiritual selfishness. So let us make sure that that particular type of fate does not befall us. The hierarchy works, as you know, in and through three major departments, each possessing its full personnel, and under the three great lords, the Manu, the Bodhisattva, the Mahachohan. I have dealt with this in some detail in Initiation Human and Solar, you know, written, I don't know, 24 years maybe before this was written, as well as elsewhere in my writings. More information on this point is needless and of no real service to you. He gives us what we absorb or can absorb, or what it is necessary for us to absorb. Three great departments, and, you know, in a way we have to know to which department we essentially belong. The hierarchy works also through the seven major ashrams, the Ray ashrams, and their seven major and their affiliated ashrams. And these, quote, seven are the 49. And these seven, which are the 49, represent in their totality the seven rays with their sub-rays, and are the custodians, transmitters, distributors of the seven ray energies to the seven planetary centers, when there are seven planetary centers. It depends on whether we consider the seven chains as centers, which in a way we should, or the globes as centers, even though on any one globe, such as our fourth globe, only at this time are five planetary centers activated: New York, London, Geneva, Darjeeling, Tokyo. And of course, all of these 49 are not yet in place, but maybe the destiny of any one person lies towards one of these sub-centers, in addition to being a member of the major Ray ashram. You know, for instance, a subsidiary ashram is probably 2 sub 3 that Master DK presides over. And, teaching through art, 2 sub 4, teaching the science of consciousness, 2 sub 5, the New World Religion, 2 sub 6, the healing, 2 sub 7, that kind of thing. And of course, other possibilities with each one of those Subray ashrams. They're just not completed yet, that's all. And we're not given an indication here that they are not completed. Elsewhere, he talks about it. So eventually there will be on our planet 7 planetary centers. To those in the fourth kingdom in nature, as they gradually unfold over the eons, and then via these to the 7 centers in the individual man, and such is the synthesis. So if you got that straight, you're better than I am. So I was chopped it up a bit in the reading. The hierarchy works through the 7 major ashrams and their affiliated ashrams, sub-ashrams, and these 7, which are the 49, and will be the 49 really, represent in their totality the 7 rays with their sub-rays, and are the custodians, transmitters and distributors of the 7 ray energies to the 7 planetary centers, the eventual 7 planetary centers, via these centers to those in the fourth kingdom of nature. It's interesting that a human being is connected with a planetary center. You know, a great area of geography is presided over by a planetary center, but human beings are connected as well, and of course nations, but also it looks like the individual human being is connected to those, and via these 7 centers to those in the fourth kingdom of nature as they gradually unfold over the eons, but maybe in group form, and maybe certain types of groups are connected with by ray with certain planetary centers. And then via these to the 7 centers in the individual man. Yeah. So not only the group, not only the community, not only the state, the nation, and all of that, but the individual human being. Such is the synthesis. And it's always good for us to have a really good idea of what synthesis is all about. It's the easy word to use, but we have to be aware of what's called an articulated synthesis. It's not just a mystical lump. It's a well-defined synthetic interrelationship with full of detail, but still full of oneness. The 7 major centers or ashrams within the hierarchy are each presided over by masters of Chohan rank. Now, that's a very definite statement. So that when we're sort of missing at the moment, Master R, because he's become the Maha Chohan, the one who presides over the 7th ray ashram, whoever that is, and people have different ideas about it, you know. I was talking to a sensitive person who says, it's definitely Mary, who is now the Chohan of that particular ashram. Well, I just don't know, you know. I know that to take the 5th initiation, it is necessary to have the male body in terms of electricity. But I'm not sure about the Chohanic initiation, the number 6. It may not be necessary to have the male vehicle, though everyone we seem to be learning about does have that male vehicle. So the 7 major centers or ashrams within the hierarchy are each presided over by masters of Chohan rank. The 7 subsidiary centers or ashrams are presided over by masters and adepts of the 5th and 4th initiation, especially maybe the scientific ashrams. They seem to allow ashramic presiding by initiates of the 4th degree, aided by initiates of the 3rd degree and certain picked and senior disciples, then are not quite initiate. So, you know, more a 2nd degree thing, senior disciples are not quite initiate, real initiates. Several of the seven affiliated ashrams are as yet, okay, well, now here he gets into it. Several of the seven affiliated ashrams are as yet incomplete as regards personnel, but vacancies are rapidly being filled as the spiritual effects of the world war make themselves felt. These effects are very real and have been a source of a great encouragement to hierarchical workers. Well, it's been a terrible war. Yes, terrible war, but has provided a kind of intensive training for those who would become members of the still subsidiary ashrams with directorial positions unfilled. Before the hierarchy can emerge, as is the intention, does that mean they might not? Well, I think, you know, they definitely will. It's just a question of how they will be recognized and how they will be greeted and treated. I mean, delays can come in here, and sometimes the 300-year delay that he talks about, I think in Esoteric Psychology Volume 1, can be superseded by a much longer delay that he seemed to mention recently in some of what we've studied in this book, maybe millennia. It'd be a terrible thing to go through the Aquarian age in a non-spiritual way, because the danger to humanity would be very great. Before the hierarchy can emerge, as is the intention, in the way intended, we might say, but their emergence is also intended, the relationship between a major ashram and its subsidiary ashrams must be firmly established, whilst that between a major ashram and other major ashrams has to be brought more definitely and unquestionably closer to Shambhala and under the influence of the great First Ray Center. So the Chohan, you know, has a strong First Ray leaning and has to develop that ray strongly. Otherwise, no emergence is possible. So, you know, maybe the filling in of the various ray ashrams is a requirement before the ashram can emerge, and yet the First Ray ashram is emerging and has, I believe DK said, no subsidiary ashrams. The Sixth Ray and Third Ray ashrams are incomplete. The Second Ray ashram is just about complete. And he didn't say that I recall anything about the Fifth Ray ashram or the Fourth Ray ashram. But before the hierarchy can emerge, as is the intention, the relationship between a major ashram and its subsidiary ashrams must be firmly established, so maybe completed. And that, you know, is a timing factor. Whilst that between a major ashram, maybe like the second, and maybe, you know, in relation to the sixth, let us say, and other major ashrams has to be brought more definitely and unquestionably closer to Shambhala, bringing a relationship, a relationship closer to Shambhalic influence. Now, these are hierarchical matters, and we wouldn't know how to judge of them anyway. The energy which will align and adjust the subsidiary 49 ashrams, when they are ready, is that of the second ray of love wisdom. It's the great ray, it's the indigo ray, it's the great ray of our planet in this solar system, and it's the great ray of the solar logos. So the second ray is vitally important. to align and adjust the various ashrams as they emerge, because it is a unifying ray. Do I dare put it in the color indigo? You know, it is so close, but it's hard to read. But I'll just go with the color at the moment. That, however, which will bring about a similar adjusting and aligning impetus in the seven major ashrams, is the energy of the first ray of will or power. It's a shambolic energy, isn't it? And here I just have made this too small. And I'm going to go to Verdana. The energy of the first ray of will of power. So we need that. Second ray will bring about the adjustment and the harmonizing and the unification and love wisdom. But in the seven major ashrams, it has to be ruled by the first ray of will of power, which is from Shambhala, with the Lord of the World as the head, really, or using hierarchy as his ashram. I have here given you a most important item of occult information, but one which is of no importance to you individually. It serves, however, to present proof of the significant occult relation between the three planetary centers. Well, I just keep on thinking I'd better put that in red. So again, that, however, which will bring about a similar adjusting and aligning impetus, because as a result of the alignment, forward progress will be made, progress onward being the type of motion of the first ray. That which will bring about a similar adjusting and aligning impetus in the seven major ashrams, all considered together, is the energy of the first ray of will and power. So the relationship between great first ray center, the energy which will align and adjust the subsidiary 49 ashrams, not considered as a major ray ashram, is that of the second ray of love wisdom. However, if you want to align the entire ray ashram as a whole, within itself and with each other, we need the energy of Shambhala. I hope I do understand that. I hope you do too. Just as the third planetary center, humanity, has now reached a point of intelligent development, so there would be a lot more third ray personalities with lesser soul rays, in some cases switching to the third ray, has now reached a point of intelligent development so that a closer rapport can be set up between it and the hierarchy. So the hierarchy has moved towards forward as a unit, that's the key, so that a closer corresponding rapport can also be set up between it and Shambhala. Well, let's see how I shall do this. I'll kind of make this on the green side of things. And then, so the hierarchy has moved as a unit closer so that there can be a corresponding rapport set up between it and Shambhala. In other words, different centers are moving closer to superior centers. And I think what we would find is that as the throat center would approximate the heart center, so the heart center would approximate the head center, even though in a way the heart center remains supreme. Just as the rapport between the hierarchy and humanity is established via aspirants, disciples, and initiates in physical existence who are responding to the love wisdom of the universe in some measure, and who work via the intelligent people in incarnation primarily. Okay, so let's make that blue. I love the indigo, but I'll stay away from it for the moment. So, rapport between Shambhala and the hierarchy is being more closely established via the senior ashrams. Maybe the entire Ray Ashram, Master K.H.'s entire second Ray Ashram, Master Hilarion's entire fifth Ray Ashram, Master Moria's entire first Ray Ashram. So rapport between Shambhala and the hierarchy is being more closely established via the senior ashrams and not via the secondary ones. Well, that really explains what is said above, that Shambhala is required for the larger Ray Ashrams. Let's see if I have that correct. Yes, a similar adjusting and aligning impetus in the seven major ashrams has to be handled by the first Ray and by Shambhala, and the adjustment of the subsidiary ashrams is handled by the second Ray. Well, this is an important element of occult information, and we, it's not useful to us individually, but maybe in a group sense more so. So rapport between Shambhala and the hierarchy is being more closely established via the senior ashrams, who are headed by Chohans, who are automatically, and at least for a time, members of Shambhala, and not via the secondary ones. The secondary ashrams are not reaching into Shambhala. They are headed by masters, and they reach into the major Ray ashram in which they are included, and not via the secondary ones. You have, therefore, a situation which might be depicted somewhat as follows. This is interesting, and I don't want to get into it because it's a subject all of its own. And I think rather than get into it and have to leave off, I'm so close to an hour here that I can wait until later. 528, we're on page 528. And I think 523 to 528 is what we're dealing with in this particular program number 60. So by the time I finish doing this, May the 25th, we will have expended about an hour's worth of discussion. I guess that means me talking to myself, but hopefully talking to you too and giving you ideas that will spring up intuitively in your consciousness, regardless of what I say, or maybe because of it, but certainly most probably because of what the Tibetan has said. So far, we've done adjustments and alignments in general. Let's see here. Yes, hierarchical adjustment and alignment, and then hierarchical adjustment within itself, and those two factors particularly, and then the discussion of the subsidiary ashrams integrated under Ray 2 largely, and the major Ray ashrams integrated under Ray 1. And this tells us a big hint. This is a hint about a hint. Oh, that's an interesting word. Hint about the timing. And oh, come on. Timing of the EXHH. A hint. That must be in some interesting language. Okay. Right. And basically, I'm going to reduce this and hint about. And we'll reduce it a little bit. 1, 2, 3, 4, and we'll make it of that color. All right. And then it takes us into the relationship of the subsidiary ashrams to hierarchy and of the major Ray ashrams to Shambhala. Because after all, ruled by a Chohan, Chohans are de facto members of Shambhala, even if temporarily, and even if they choose other paths. If they choose the path of earth service, they will remain for a long time as members of Shambhala, and maybe there's a term set upon that. I don't know. The Christ has been a Chohan since Palestinian days, and I presume the Manu and the Maha Chohan have been Chohans since a later time, and the Christ is moving in this long seventh degree process towards the completion of the seventh degree, and so is the Buddha. Well, there's a lot of information here, and you kind of wonder, you know, do we get it? Do we understand it? I always question myself, do I understand it? So this is the end of number 60, and basically we're dealing with 5:23, and it's about an hour and 3 minutes, yeah? 5:23 to 5:28. 5 pages. 5:28, okay. 5:28. And the beginning of program number 61, approximately 1 hour and X minutes. You never know. I might be inspired to go on for a 2 hour program, but a meeting prevents me from doing that right now. And May 25th, let's say May XX, because I don't know when I'll do this. I've done 3 programs today and it can take it out of you, you know? All right, friends. So thank you for attending. And we have a relationship we're going to get into here about the different planetary centers and what they control. There's just, even in a little sentence, there's so many hints that will give lines of light to other factors which may have been insufficiently understood. At least they will be more greatly understood. So, here is the stop recording. Many blessings, lots of love. I stopped the recording.